Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Myna Samuels, and we will be talking about reasons why sports matter in a mother's life. In her newest book, Run Like a Girl, 365 Days a Year, a practical, personal, inspirational guide for women athletes, Myna shares daily wisdom as a spiritual running buddy for women on the run. Through entries for each day of the year, she explores the questions that confound us. How do we find balance in our lives, and what nourishes and empowers our inner strength and resolve? Myna Samuels, a former human rights attorney and activist, began her career looking to bring about more robust citizenship into the world. Her specialty at Human Rights Watch was to help incarcerated children. Today, she works to make a day-to-day difference in women's lives. You can find out more by visiting her website, which is MynaSamuels.com, and that's MynaSamuels.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Myna to the show. Good day, Myna.
Good day, Robert. Thanks for having me on.
It is my pleasure, and I have a feeling by the end of our hour today that we're going to be really inspiring women out there, and I'm looking forward to that. So I'd like to start, you know, I'm always interested in people's journey, you know, and the twists and turns that they take. And so for you, I would be interested in finding out, you know, how and why you went from being a human rights attorney and activist to becoming an author, playwright, and making the difference. Oh, an athlete, excuse me, and making a difference in women's lives. So kind of, how did that journey evolve?
Well, I started, I won't go back to my childhood, but I will say that I moved to New York in 1993. I was pursuing my master's of law, and with an aim, I had been practicing law in Toronto. I'm Canadian, so I had come from Canada to New York. And I wanted to switch from practicing regular corporate commercial litigation to doing something that was a little more, as you say, citizenship-based, human rights-based. And so I came to New York to study my master's of law. And when I got here, I started running a little bit, just as a way to clear my mind, you know, while I was working so hard at school. And I started doing these little runs at first I just ran outside of Central Park, because I thought it was too scary to go inside Central Park. And so I would run sort of up and down the side of Central Park, and I built up until I would run the perimeter of Central Park outside on Central Park West and Fifth Avenue. And eventually I made my way into the park, only to discover there were lots of people in the park, and it was the most beautiful and wonderful place to run. It has hills and beautiful little running trails. And one day I was talking to the law librarian at the law school, and she was asking me about my running. And I said, well, you know, I run 10, maybe 3 or 4 times a week, thinking to myself, I run 10 kilometers. 3 times a week, really, but I exaggerated a little bit with the 3 or 4 times a week. because I was trying to impress her a little bit. Well, she was very impressed, and much more impressed than I really thought I deserved for my 10-kilometer runs, because she was a very serious runner. She had done marathons, and so anyways, I was walking home from the law library, and I thought, oh, no, she didn't think I meant 10 kilometers. She thought I was running 10 miles 3 to 4 times a week, which is impressive, in my opinion. That's an extremely impressive amount of running, which I had never done. And not only that, I had never run 10 miles in one shot even. And I thought, oh, no, I feel terrible. I've misled her. And I went home and I put on my running clothes immediately. It was the middle of the day. And I just thought, I'm just going to go out and try to run 10 miles. So that at least I wasn't lying. So I went out into the park and I actually ran. I just felt, you know, I'm not usually an exaggerator. I had kind of slid it a little with the 3 to 4 times a week, but oh, for her to think it was 10 miles each time was too much for me. So I went out to the park. It was a gorgeous day, as I recall. Though maybe it was just gorgeous because the experience was so beautiful for me. And I ran 2 loops of Central Park, which is a 12-mile run, actually. And it was, I say a lot in my book that transformation takes a long time and it's hard and it doesn't happen in one day and one moment. But there are moments in our lives that are so notable that they pivot us in new directions. And for me, that moment of running 12 miles in Central Park, it was like halfway through the run, the top of my head started to lift off. I mean, I really had one of those moments where when I went into the park, I was one person. And when I came out of the park, I was this new person. I wasn't quite sure I understood, because I had so exceeded anything I thought I could do that, I mean, it was exhilarating to begin with, but it also just really seeped into everything I was doing with my life. I really started to think about, okay, wait, wow, if I can do that thing, what are other things I can do that seem impossible to me? And so it was like it took some blinders off of my eyes and it opened me to more of the world and more possibilities. And then things just kind of went from there. My life didn't change instantaneously, but it changed a lot. To begin with, I stayed in New York, so that was one thing. I also... oddly enough, met the man I've now been with for 25 years. I signed up for a running class at the New York Roadrunners Club, as it was called then, and he was in the class, and I met him there. So running also brought me the love of my life, which was quite nice as an extra bonus. And it changed the way I related to myself in the world. So, you know, I worked for a little while in human rights, and I recognized that there were aspects of myself that I wasn't nourishing doing that work in the way I was doing it. And I had started taking, you know, little writing classes, little fiction writing classes, here and there, and I was really enjoying it. And that was coming back to something I had loved as a child. I had loved writing, and I had actually loved theater, though it took me a lot longer to get back to theater than it did to writing. And I started to realize that the work that I wanted to do in the world had to involve writing in a really much more concerted way. And so I started to move. I moved out of the human rights, and I moved into publishing for a little while until ultimately I got up the courage to work freelance. And that's pretty much you know, the path that I have been on for the last maybe 17 years, I started working freelance. And now, of course, I do a lot less freelance work because I have a lot of my own work to be doing. But yeah, that's sorry. That was probably a much longer story than I expected.
No, that was great. No, that was great, you know, because, I mean, you in that discussion, I mean, in that description, you know, you really touch on so many areas that women and, you know, and men. I mean, you know, it even though, you know, the discussion is going to be, you know, focused on women, you know, much of, you know, the inspiration and your perspective can be applied to men as well. So I'll just, you know, get that out there right now for those guys listening. You know, the idea of, first of all, avoiding Central Park, you know, that fear of, you know, what is within that, you know. I mean, so often people just avoid the unknown, you know, and maybe fears, you know, are based in things we've seen or heard, or but the idea of, you know, after you recognize that, you know, going into the park had some wonderful, you know, benefits. I mean, just overcoming that fear, and you know, that is something that is so limiting for so many people, and you know that is a, I would say it's one of those areas that I think if people are confronted with fear, is to maybe just do something, you know, to shed light on that or to eliminate that fear.
Do you mind if I tell a little story about fear or just where I'm at with fear right now?
Please do.
Something that's very much, I hadn't even sort of thought of that connection between that story, but I have been, I'm so proud. I've been on a little bit of a meditation streak. I think today was 156 days in a row. I'm so proud of that. But anyway, I should clarify that many of those days have been 10 minutes. So you know. Anyway, but I recently read Kristen Ulmer's book. She's a former extreme skier. And she wrote this book called The Art of Fear. And one of the things she recommends in the book is to meditate on fear. And, you know, I am not very doctrinal in my meditation. I'm happy to listen to guided meditations. I'm happy to listen to sort of sound bath things. I'm happy to listen to chanting ohms or gongs or nothing. So I thought, okay, well, that's a new kind of meditation. Let me try that. And essentially, you're just sit in your meditation and invite the voice of fear to speak. Just sort of, you know, I'll sit down and I'll just say, so fear, what's up today? What are you feeling? I mean, how do you feel in my body, which is a different thing, but just, you know, what are you scared of today? What are the things that are on your mind? So first of all, I'm discovering that, oh, the list is really long of things I'm scared of. And it can be overwhelming and it can be an overwhelming feeling in the body. But I've also been experiencing some really interesting shifts, I think, related to this meditation. And I just wanted to recount two of them because I find them so fascinating. And one is that I had a couple of scary dreams in a row, a couple of nights in a row. And in one of them, someone was coming to try to attack me and hurt me. That's a fairly standard dream, I guess, for many people. In my standard dream, I either run like crazy to get away and, of course, have that whole dream thing where I can't quite run. Or I try to fight the person. So it's a violent response. And in my dream, I just turned and I faced the person. I said, you don't want to do this. This is not how you want to live your life. Like, it's not going to do me any good if you hurt me, but it's really not going to do you any good either. It was so surprising to me to just have that reaction to the fearful situation. And it made me think about how this allowing myself to think really deeply about my fears is actually in the sort of, you know, space of the meditation is really helping me to not dismiss them and not push them away and not say, oh, that's invalid, because that's definitely one of my tendencies. Well, that's not a valid fear. Who's scared of that? That's a silly thing to be scared of. But it just allows me to sort of hold hands with it in a more productive way or a more nourishing way that allows it to be with me, but allows me to move forward. And then the other one was that I was, you can imagine I have a book coming out. So I'm in a very active moment of my life of hopes and dreams of, you know, how things are going to work out. I also just had a play produced. And so it's thinking about, well, where will the next production be? I was doing a different meditation that said that the object was that we think about the future as we want it to be. And we try to think about it with a very big, elevated emotion, positive emotion, joy, gratitude, love. And usually I go to gratitude because it's easy. It's easier for me of all of those emotions because I feel super grateful about my life. So I can find gratitude almost always, even, you know, if it's not the best day. So I was sitting in meditation. I was thinking about my future, you know, oh, my book's a big success and the play has a lovely production. And then I thought, okay, now gratitude, you can show up now. And it's hard to describe because it's just a feeling, but the feeling I had was courage just stepped up and said, it's nice gratitude. Usually you do this, but I have this today. I'm the big emotion that's going to come and accompany Mina on this meditation journey today. And it was really, it was an incredibly powerful feeling because courage is something I have trouble with. And I think a lot of women have trouble with. I think men do too. I'm just not in men's experience as much.
Right,
but the feeling of not being worthy, even if you've succeeded, of not being worthy of that success, is something we wrestle with a lot, and it can really stump us. And to suddenly, at least during this period of my meditation, have this really kick-ass feeling of courage right there with me, you know, kind of accompanying me on the thinking about my future. And I was describing it to my partner afterwards, and he said, wow, I hope courage comes to visit a little more often.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting. You know, the dream of the fleeing, it was like the typical fight or flight kind of responses,
yeah,
you know, to threats, you know. And I love the response of, you know, not fleeing, of course, but and not fighting, but more of a, and it's not really an embrace, but it's kind of like an acceptance and a peaceful response to that. You know, and you know, that I think is, I think that's wonderful to be able to do that. I think, you know, that's a wonderful thing to have come out in, you know, in a meditation.
I love that you used the word, because as you were speaking, I was thinking, wow, what is the word? Because fight or flight, but it's not one of those. And I love that you used the word embrace, though you set it aside. but I think that that might be the right word, because I love that word. It's very beautiful, because it doesn't have to be physical. It's like a warm acceptance, and
yeah.
and inviting things into our lives in a way. So I have to say that I've had a few friends ask me about meditation, and I've been recommending this way of meditating on fear just to kind of see what comes up, because it's so interesting. And mainly, it's not like I say, oh, we should do this so that, you know, and then you'll have wild success. It's more just so we can be easier on ourselves. Everything flows from that, I think. If we can be more gentle with our own selves first, then we can be gentle in the world.
You know, it is that self-critic is just, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that I work with all the time. You know, it's just, you know, and I think a lot of it is from old tapes, you know, things that I, you know, was taught growing up, or what I heard, and beliefs that I formed that, you know, maybe not accurate, you know, and that that really need to be updated, you know. But self-criticism is it's a tough one. I think everybody, you know, has that to a degree. But we'll talk about that a little bit later, because we're going to talk about the entry that you had for today. But let's go to the title of the book, Run Like a Girl. You know, one of the things about being an author is one of the most important decisions you make is coming up with a title for the book. So why did you choose that particular phrase?
Well, I thought a lot about it, actually, and as you say, and the title, I must say, is this wildly important thing, and it's something that's often a big negotiation with the publisher. And my publisher at first wanted to change the name of, well, we did change the name of the book from the title I submitted, but they wanted to maybe get rid of the run like a girl part. And I, for that one, I was in fight mode, I think, to keep run like a girl in the title, because it was so important to me. I mean, it was the title of a previous book that I published on these topics, but very different format. But I also just feel like it captures the exact spirit that I would like to communicate in the book. First, I'm reclaiming a phrase that's used as an insult toward women and toward girls, and giving it to us as a claim of strength. And I had a long discussion at one point with a friend who said, well, shouldn't it be run like a woman? You know, girl is minimizing. But what I am trying to evoke with the run like a girl is this access we have through our whole lives to the child aspects of ourselves that are filled with joy, and they bubble a little, and they are curious, so important to stay curious, and they are capable of awe. I know that one of your particular topics is finding inspiration in nature, and, you know, part of the way that we find that inspiration in the natural world is because it is so awesome. And you know, I think that that gets captured in the word girl. So I'm trying to get this, the ineffability of childhood that stays with us, and then the strength that I would love for every woman to own that I know she knows she has inside her, even if she's not accessing all of it.
Yeah. You know, first of all, when I first read, you know, when I first saw the title, it did evoke that, the idea of it being an insult, you know, to, and quite often it's like, I mean, I probably was, that was probably said to me when I was running as a young kid, you know, you run like a girl, you know, and, you know, that's one of those things you work on. But you know, it's interesting because, you know, what it does is it brings up, you know, all of the baggage that society kind of dumped on that phrase, you know, and I think it's wonderful that you're switching it up, you know, that it's going from what was once considered an insult, and sometimes, you know, it can be, you know, said in a way to be insulting, but instead making it a focus of empowerment, you know, and I think it's, you know, it's great. It certainly would not have had the same impact as, you know, run like a woman, you know, that, because that didn't, you know, it just doesn't have that significance, you know, and I think what you're, you know, the purpose of your book is, you know, to inspire, and so I think that, you know, I personally think it's a great one, but it's one of the things I've noticed is that whenever I, you know, have a guest on, you know, and I'm introduced to their book is the, you know, the title and what it invokes in me, what are my first thoughts, you know, and again, like in your book, you know, it was, you know, definitely, you know, that negative, but then, you know, as you go through and read the daily inspiration, you know, you see the empowerment, the power, the authenticity really kind of comes out. So I think it was a great choice, and I'm glad that you won the battle with your publisher on that one.
Thank you. Couple of little things I wanted to say. One is that I'm sorry that people said that to you, because it is between children, I would say, and in many adults' cases, it's not meant kindly, and no. Which is kind of why I want to reclaim it. But I now wish you with all my heart and a loving spirit that you should run like a girl with us.
Absolutely. You know, so I would embrace that childlike, you know, that childlike joy that it invokes.
Yeah, and the freedom to be, you know, the freedom to be ourselves, which may not always be serious, which brings me to a more serious word in the title that is one that that I've had trouble with, that was put there by the publisher, but came to peace, which is the word athlete at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first told a few friends about, you know, the very long subtitle of the book, ending with athlete, a couple of them were like, ooh, well, that's sort of off-putting. I mean, I'm not an athlete. I wouldn't buy that book. And which was exactly what I was worried about. While at the same time, now that it's there, I feel like it gives me the opportunity to emphasize that athlete does not refer to the person winning the gold medal at the Olympics only. It refers to any of us who are pursuing excellence in our lives, whatever that looks like in our lives. So, I mean, literally, most of us aren't physically made to win a gold medal, A. And B, we have a lot of other things that are, you know, as or more important that we want to pursue. And so I think it actually can be an incredibly positive thing for people to start really thinking of themselves as athletes and thinking of themselves as people who pursue excellence in their lives and who want to kind of get the best out of themselves. One of the women I interviewed for the book was talking about her running partner who refused to call herself an athlete, even though she did races and she did well in the races and, you know, took her running very seriously. And she really had to encourage her friend to even use the word because her friend felt like it was too big a word, too daunting a word. And so in the same way that I want women to claim their strength and their, you know, the girlness in them, I would also like them to take over that word athlete and, you know, let it be something that works for them and not just an NBA player.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. Apologies for that interruption in the show. For some reason, my studio decided to close down. But anyway, we have today's guest back. Her name is Mina Samuels, and we're talking about her new book, Run Like a Girl, 365 Days a Year, A Practical, Personal, Inspirational Guide for Women Athletes. And again, you can find out more by visiting Mina's website, which is minasamuels.com, and that's MinaSamuels.com. And we're back, Mina. Apologies for that. Sometimes technology is great when it works, but it's a pain when it doesn't.
No problem at all. I'm just happy to hear it wasn't my fault.
No. It can be temperamental sometimes. But anyway, we're back, and we were we were rudely interrupted. We were discussing the idea that you put the word athletes at the end of the subtitle, and there was maybe some concern from others that about you including that.
Yes, that it was a bit of a distancing word, that athlete only applies to people who are winning gold medals at the Olympics or playing for a professional sports team. And I was worried about that at first. But then when I really started to think about it, I realized that, I was thinking about how long it took me to think of myself as an athlete. And even sometimes now I'll think, well, I'm an athlete, but I'm not really an athlete. But it is a word that really just describes anyone in sports or not in sports. It's a great word to just describe a person who is pursuing excellence, who is trying to do what they do or be how they are in the world at their highest personal level. And that looks different for all of us. The important part is the sort of effort to be the best that you can obviously not every single minute of every single day, but we are all athletes in some aspects of our lives. And certainly if we do sports, we are an athlete at any level. We are an athlete. And there's something very powerful in thinking of yourself that way. It gives you permission to dedicate yourself a little bit more to your sports maybe. And it certainly is a bit of a rocket boost in terms of trying maybe a little bit harder, maybe negotiating a little more forcefully with fear, say, which we were talking about earlier. So I have come to the place where I actually like the word there, and I find that it's almost like it's a challenge to me personally to make sure that I am trying the best I can try and being the athlete I want to be.
Yeah, we know. It's interesting. I can understand, you know, the hesitancy, you know, especially from a publisher's point of view of wanting to make sure that the breadth of your target, you know, market is as wide as possible, and that, you know, the idea of athlete would possibly narrow that. But as you know, as I was reading your description of what an athlete is and the idea of, you know, redefining that term, you know, to mean someone who is inspired or aspiring to be the best that they can be in whatever shape, way, shape, or form, you know, immediately, you know, once I read that, I thought, you know, I mean, we have, you know, math, you know, kids who are, you know, mathletes, you know, that they're, you know,
yes.
That's, you know, that's, you know, where their focus is at, or, you know, and so, and I think that's great because it really puts the focus or the intention on being better, you know, and whether it's being better in sports or being better at whatever your, you know, calling is, you know, when you think of an athlete, you can visualize that effort. So I think in that sense, you know, then, you know, once people recognize that, you know, as long as you have a body and you're working toward improving, then you're an athlete.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, And then there are times when we need to ease off. I mean, that's part of the balance, is that we absolutely aspiring and working towards personal excellence is fantastic and important. And taking a nap when you really need a nap is also important.
Yes. I like that.
You can't be on the gas the whole time.
No, I've embraced that one a lot. I mean, I used to be the type that, you know, the idea of a nap or the idea of, you know, taking a walk in nature or anything that I couldn't, anything that didn't produce, you know, something, you know, was not the best use of my time. But I've come to recognize that, you know, that's just silly, and it's just kind of, you know, the conditioning that kind of led me to, you know, constantly strive without having balance, and balance is important.
Right. I mean, are we here? I frequently worry about whether my life has meaning, and I worry a lot more about that than I worry about producing. Of course, I worry a lot about producing too, but I feel like there's an imbalance in society a little these days, in that we seem to think that producing is the most important thing. And I don't think that's why we're here. I'm not sure exactly why we're here in some big, huge meta way, but my feeling is that connecting is more important.
Yeah. Now,
that,
it's no coincidence.
Creating actual connections.
Just before today's show, I was watching a show that I had recorded. It's called 911. I don't know if you've seen it, but in that particular episode, I mean, I literally watched it an hour before today's show. In that show, the 911 operator was thinking about quitting because she did not see the results of her work. You know, that she would direct people, to problem solving. She used to be a nurse and would see everything through. And at the very end of the show, she was confronted by all of the people whose lives that she touched, all of the the difference that she had made, things that she hadn't seen, but had made the difference.
Yeah.
And I think that's that's something that to keep in mind is that we may not see directly the influence that we have on other people's lives. But, being who we are, doing what we do to the best of our ability, and helping others, does have, an impact. And we really shouldn't be, it's not necessarily important to have that validation to recognize that what we do is important, who we are is important, that, but I guess that's the human experience. We kind of like to see that we make a difference, but, just in today's show, with you, talking about your experiences, about the fear meditation, I mean, you'll be helping lots of listeners just by sharing that. And so I think, for people out there who wonder whether or not, their lives have meaning, or, why exist, why go on, why do this, why do my job, is to recognize that there is a ripple effect, and everyone does matter, whether we see it or not.
Yes. And we are connected in that. One of the things that one of the initial impulses when I started writing this book, I started writing it in a very different form. It's always been the Book of Days, but I started writing it in a different way at first, which I ultimately abandoned. But one of my earliest impulses was that I wanted to write a book that wrestled a bit with this question of that I think many of us wrestle with, which is, how can I be a good person in the world and also have fun? They often seem like they're opposing, that if we're going to be a good person in the world, then we're going to be a good person in the world, and we will be very serious, and that will not involve too much laughter, or it'll involve a certain amount of laughter because that's the right amount of laughter. And it could be that, one of the personal balancing acts that I feel like I'm constantly undertaking in this vein is to do with environmental issues. I'm not going to be perfect. I just accept that I'm not going to be perfect, but how can I be better at it?
Right.
How can I use less plastic? How can I just a little bit better is good.
Right.
So without, cutting off the pleasure of walking down the street one day and saying, I really just want a coconut water right now. I just really want that. And I know it's going to be in a plastic bottle, but it'll taste so good and I'll feel so happy. So,
uh-huh. And then I'll reuse that plastic bottle later.
Yeah, exactly. Or I'll, make sure I put it in the place where I know it's going to get recycled as opposed to where I doubt that it will get recycled.
Exactly.
That's always been one. And I have to say that one of the things that that really touches me the most and why I continue writing is when I talk to someone who has personally been affected. And it's just, it just always makes me feel good. And on the, at the very beginning of the top of the show, you said, well, the book is not just for women. It's not, it's primarily aimed at women, but I was thrilled recently when a friend of mine who had, who was out of a job, recently out of a job and whose father died, emailed me to tell me that he had started reading my book because now he had time, and he was super inspired, and he started going to a yoga class, and, you know, that felt really good, and I just thought, oh, wow, I just felt so good when he sent that to me, to think, well, I could have, like, a teeny little, you know, little drop of positivity into his life. That feels... Today, I'm not going to worry about whether my life has meaning.
There you go. Good. And you ought to keep a little list of that, you know, so whenever you have those doubts, you know, that you can bring out that list and it's like, oh, yeah, I remember, you know. And so, I mean, you know, and like, you know, it is human nature to have those days. But it's always nice to be able to get that confirmation, you know, so... Now, one of the things, before we get, gosh, it's already like 10 minutes till. So before we get too much farther, the book is set up for, you know, each day of the year. So there's like an inspirational piece that you write for each day. And I was particularly, I found the entry for today's date, May 7th, to be particularly interesting. It's one that I would like to share with the listeners. So would you mind sharing that with listeners so we can talk a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. So each day is set up with the date, and then it has a little phrase at the top, which just sort of describes what's going to happen in the day. And on this May 7th day, I'm in a multi-day description of a trail half marathon that I had done a couple days before, and which ironically happened again for this year on Sunday, though I didn't do it this year. May 7th, not the best trail half marathon. I hadn't run 100 meters in the half marathon before I knew it wasn't going to be my day in my body either. My left hamstring zoomed up to level 11 on the ineffectiveness scale. I was running on one concrete leg. It was an ancient injury for which I had recently started some belated acupuncture. The protocol had opened new access to the strength and flexibility of my hamstring, but as a result, the muscles were in shock, as if to say, WTF, you want us to do our share now? For many years, those muscles had hidden out, letting my right leg figure out all sorts of minute ways take over the work of the left hamstring. While my left hamstring eased after a mile, I couldn't find my mojo, and one inner voice was scolding me for my weakness, while the other tried to say soothing things. Hey, that I could even hear that second voice was progress. In an earlier part of my life, the voice of kindness was on mute. Here she was, not as dominating as I might have hoped, but still making her point, which were these. It's only a race. Keep going. You can push yourself a tiny bit harder. Maybe next time you'll train more precisely. In the meantime, wow, you're amazing to be out here at all. In the end, I was 9 minutes slower than 2 years earlier. I came second in my age group. Rock star.
I love that one. You know, that voice of criticism and that voice of kindness, you know, that is just something that I think, particularly with women, is a it can be a real challenge to get that kindness stepping up to the plate.
And I'm guessing that almost all of us need more of the voice of kindness to step up for us. And I mean, I just did another half marathon a couple weeks ago with a friend for her birthday. And I didn't do as well as I hoped. I didn't train as well as I hoped. When will I learn? And I was also had an injury, since that's just one of the plagues of running. But I was certainly, while I was running, I was really trying to think, you know what? You're out. I was listening for the voice of kindness, and letting her speak in a way that I feel like sometimes we think that if we let the voice of kindness speak, we're letting ourselves off too easy.
Mm-hmm.
And the world is a hard place. So I'm not saying that we don't want to have a voice in there that's, you know, giving us a little gentle push in the back and saying, you can do better. You can do, you know, this isn't all you're capable of. But we need that voice to speak with kindness to us and encouragement, and not just sort of, you know, lash us with a whip.
Yeah. You know, as you were saying that, the image came to my mind, you know, of a coach, you know, a coach being able to, you know, get the team excited and enthused and motivated, you know, but can do it in without berating and, you know, and being derogatory, you know. So I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, you can motivate, but do it kindly. I mean, you can do it in a way that is, and I think that's much more empowering to do it through kindness rather than, you know, try and force, or, you know what I'm trying to say as far as the approach.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think that's something I feel like I'm hearing in the air these days, that the coaching technique of, you know, breaking people down is falling a little out of favor, and I hope it keeps falling out of favor. Another area that I just had a very, very recent experience in with this is theater, which is another pursuit where there is an entire school of thought, you know, pervasive schools of thought, that the idea is to break the actor down into pieces so they're an emotional puddle on the floor, and then build them back up again slowly, and then, you know, they can take on the great roles of their lives. And my play that was just done by the theater department at University of Illinois, one of the critical things to me as the playwright and to the director was that we create a process with the students that was nurturing,
mm-hmm.
not slack, but that was very, very nurturing. And it's a cast of 10 women. And we were specifically trying to create an environment in which there was none of this trash talking people or breaking people down, or which is so, so common in theater, where things can get very rough and very personal and sometimes a little personally abusive. And I was so proud at the end of our process, because the women who were part of the cast, and we also had three women who were the stage managers and assistant stage managers, everyone, through the whole thing, we had stuck together. We had, you know, the director was commenting that she couldn't believe how smoothly the rehearsal process had gone, and we had achieved a good product. We had produced in the midst of not breaking people down, in the midst of a kind process. So it can work.
Great.
It can totally work.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, well, we're down toward the end of the show, Myna. So what is your hope for readers, the takeaway from reading Run Like a Girl?
You know, what I hope for from people is whatever their equivalent is to my leaving that law library that day and just lacing up my running shoes and going out. whatever that is for a person after they've read my book or while they're reading my book, that's what I wish for them. I wish for them to find a new little piece of themselves that is strong and joyous and excellent.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love the 365-day-a-year format, you know, because it allows the reader to take a little bit every day, and, you know, it's through over a year's period, I would think that you would be able to have that kind of transformation, you know, to being to feeling more empowered, more alive, happier. So it's a good format, and you know, I enjoyed reading it, and I really want to thank you for your time here today.
Thank you so much for having me on, and I love that word alive, by the way. Beautiful. That's a beautiful word for us to end on.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And now, if people want to get in touch with you, the best way would be how?
They can do it through my website. There's a contact thing on my website.
Great.
So, and I'm responsive, as they say.
Okay. Good. That sounds great. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Mina. I've really enjoyed our talk.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much, Robert.
My pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Mina Samuels, and we've been talking about her new book, Run Like a Girl, 365 Days a Year, a Practical, Personal, Inspirational Guide for Women Athletes. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is minasamuels.com, and that's MinaSamuels.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.